You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with R.M. Fisher in her studio in New York City. R.M., thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for asking me.
So tell me what you're working on now. And you're on, you're in Manhattan in East Broadway, is that where you are?
No, on Lower Broadway in Soho area of Manhattan.
An area where there's not that many artists with studios anymore, right?
No, we grandfathered in here since the 70s, otherwise we wouldn't be here. We can't, we are the pioneers, I guess, of Soho.
Right, so you're in an AIR building? Is that what happened?
Yes. Mm. Yes. I also have a studio upstate, which is where I usually work in the summer, but I had to come into town for some business, but I'll be going back up in a day or two. So most of the summer I spend upstate where I have a studio.
And so what are you working on now? Let's, I guess, talk about what's happening in the city, but we could also talk about what's happening in the studio upstate. But, what projects or work are you involved with now?
Well, since I do spend the summer upstate, I usually try to figure out what I would like to make in a different kind of space than I have here in the city. So upstate, I work in a small, basically an old 19th century horse barn, which is what it used to be in the early days. So it's great to be able to work in the country and spread out, even outside I can work. And so that's a pleasure. And, of course, the weather is so beautiful up there. So I usually look forward to the summers to be able to work up there. So I've been working on sculpture, trying to use some of the parts that I have from years past and reinvent them into works that are more along the lines of what I'm doing now. So there's some kind of correlation in a way between this recent work and my early work, but there's a different tone and they're pretty different in a certain way. But
involved in that a little bit more. Tell me a little bit more about the new work and how it does relate to the older work. What is it sounds like it's borrowing or almost recycling ideas from old work or referencing it?
Well, not ideas, but materials. It's the ideas I'm hoping are fresh and new. The materials, though, have a continuity with my past work. In my early work from the 80s, I was making lamp sculptures. They were sculptures that took the form of lamps, and they were made from found parts, industrial parts, cooking woks, plumbing parts. And they did light up and function. But the point for me was that I was trying to figure out a way to make abstract sculpture, but make it somehow contemporary and also have it have an ambiguous identity. Since I was interested in kind of reaching out beyond what I considered pure art concerns and deal with certain concerns like design and fashion and technology that kind of reached out into the popular culture. And so simultaneously with making these lamps, I also was able to show them, display them in department store windows. Like Bloomingdale's in New York and other department stores across the country. And I usually would have these displays coincide with a gallery show so that there was a certain question of what is the status of the art object. Who is it made for? What audience is it made for? And does its identity change when you place it in different contexts? So that's why I try to do it in both a commercial context and a so-called art gallery or museum context.
Right.
So that was what
And you got a lot of attention, of course, with respect to that early work, and that's very interesting what you're just kind of outlining, because the gallery, obviously, that's you know, working with a gallery, and you know that's to some extent in your control, but obviously they have shows at certain times. But with the commercial establishments, the Windows, the Bloomingdale's, and other places, you had to create that yourself, right? Reach out and make that happen.
Well, isn't that what you have to do with galleries as well, I think? I mean, you're not sought out as a young artist. You have to reach out and sort of find your way. So
right.
I believe, you know, it's the same thing. It's just directing your energies in other directions and hoping that you can get some kind of response to what you're doing, that what you're doing is of interest in other contexts. So that was what interests me, and I was thrilled that there was interest in other contexts, and that I had a wider array of opportunities, which was part of the reason also to seek this out, so that as a young artist trying to find my way, I had a sense of control over my destiny, I hoped by
which is very unusual. That's why that's kind of exciting to hear about that. So when you reached out to all these other commercial venues, that didn't conflict with the gallery, because the commercial venues can also sell your work as well as the galleries. Was that the case?
They did. Well, I showed some small multiples in this store called Fiorucci's, which was around in the 80s. Italian high design clothing and furniture store, and they did sell some of them, but you know, it wasn't like the work was so, you know, sought after that the gallery really cared if I spread myself thin. And certainly now artists do it all the time in every which way, so
right.
These days it's sort of kind of an accepted mode where the artist has a kind of more control, maybe. But in my day, in the 80s, it still was very fixed kind of situation, which is part of what motivated me to kind of break out of it. Because when I came back from graduate school, mostly what was going on in New York was conceptual art, which some of it I found quite interesting, but a lot of it just left me cold. It was very dry. It didn't have an emotional content as far as I could tell. And I kind of felt that it spoke to a very small audience. Mm-hmm. So I, at that time, felt that I wanted to, you know, reach out beyond that, you know, confined situation and hopefully, by doing that I also would catch attention within the art world also because of that. But, yeah.
Which happened, of course, right? So tell me a little bit about how the recent work or the work that you're doing now relates to that. Is that the period that you said you were drawing from in terms of the materials?
Yeah, in terms of the materials, I have to just add that when I started doing these works in the 80s, that public art started to become an issue, a new kind of way of looking at public art arose. And I was very interested in what was going on, because there again, it was another situation where you were outside of the art world and out into the world, and I found that opportunity very exhilarating. So eventually I started doing large-scale public art projects, which I did for about 25 years or so, along with doing the gallery and museum work. But the public art is a whole other can of worms, and I enjoy doing it, but about 10 years ago, I was thrilled to come up with something what I felt was fresh and new in my studio, and I decided that I wanted to concentrate my energies on developing that work, which is the work I'm doing now. So I kind of stopped doing the public art and just concentrated on my studio work. And what happened is I started collecting designer toys that were very big in the early 1990s and into the 2000s a bit. They were toys made by Japanese and Chinese young hip-hop type artists and was sold in these specialized stores. And it had a, you know, a very specialized audience and collectors. So I collected them and was very intrigued with them and tried to figure out, is there a way that I could somehow use this idea in my work? And it eventually segued, I don't want to go into the whole nitty-gritty of it, but it segued into me starting to sew and make soft sculpture, which was quite different from the industrial materials I had been using in my early 80s work and also in the public art, which most of that stuff is, you know, metal and industrial and architectonic and so on and so forth. This work was, this new work, which was sewn and stuffed, felt a lot more organic and pliable and warm and cuddly, but not really. But I kind of liked the edge I could get with having something that one might associate with a stuffed toy or a pillow or a creature, but at the same time give it maybe a sense of life, that it somehow incorporates its own life force that one could possibly relate to. And so it just started to develop. And so I've been working on this kind of work for the last, as I said, 10 years. And more recently, I've actually added some light elements to and metal, that some of the metal, as I said, comes from the 80s work. But now I'm mixing it in with this sewn work. And they are kind of creature-like. And I'm hoping, again, that they have a sense of that one can relate to them as creatures that living, actually living things, or that at one time they were living things. But at the same time, I want them to be somewhat awkward or vulnerable, so that there's that there as well. So there's a kind of more humanistic element in this new work than I feel was dominant in my early work, although the early work had an anthropomorphic, creature-like element as well.
Right, that's what I was going to say. Some of the early work, the early work was, you know, using also, you know, sewing, and there was steel and brass and other things in them, but they also almost looked like they could walk away, or
or
some kind of a creature that had a system to move. So comparing that work with the work now, you said some of it is kind of stuffed, and now the forms, as opposed to being kind of pieces of cloth that are sewn or riveted on, or
it started out as by making giant kind of pillows. There was no structure at all in them. They were just sewn and filled with like the filler that they use for pillows, an industrial polyester fiber. And then eventually I started adding metal as armatures to it. But I think that the main difference is when I was younger in my, you know, youth and angry and whatever, I was thinking of what I was doing kind of as anti-art, that I didn't like the whole arty thing. You know, I kind of felt that was too self-indulgent and maybe too personal. So I rejected a lot of previous art as not something I wanted to emulate. But as I guess I've gotten older and also have gone through various phases with my work, in my, I guess, my current phase, I feel like I want to make art. So these newer things for me actually feel and maybe look more like art than.
And when you say that look more like art, do you mean in a kind of decorative sense, or what does that mean? I understand the kind of how, especially your early work, was kind of a pushback, you know, and how that is a kind of a young attitude too, right? To kind of
right.
reject what's there and make the work a statement about that. But the new
right.
work and being looking like more like art means what? Because we're talking about an aesthetic, right?
We're talking about an aesthetic. Not, you know, I've always been interested in decoration. It's, and that can be defined very many ways. It doesn't have to
right.
be
right. And I mean in the broad sense, in that color field
yeah.
painters, you could talk about them as decorative, right? Or I mean,
well,
of course,
yeah,
they're
yes.
not. But you know, I mean.
Well, you could talk about Picasso that way too, but I'm sort of thinking about sort of Picasso as an arty artist. You know, it's real. He's a real artist. He draws. The work has a look that immediately you recognize has to be art. I mean, or one associates it with art based on the history of art. So that's the kind of attitude I guess I am trying to emulate in this newer work. And it does, you know, relate back, I guess, to earlier art in a lot more specific ways than maybe my 80s work did. So that's that.
You talked about it starting as kind of these pillows and having that kind of volume. And so how does that work end up? Does it also seem like it has legs ready to walk away, or how does it end up different from a lot of
having a life? Well, they could possibly float away. I don't know about walk away, but the thing is that they sort of, I'm hoping, again, that they feel alive, that they have this life, that they have a life force of their own. That they don't necessarily move. They may suggest they moved at one time. That I've always been interested in something that has a sense of the past and the future simultaneously. So you're not sure if it comes from a past time, a future time, you know, an imaginary time, but its time is not fixed. So that's why I don't like time-based sculpture. For myself, I don't want it to be using real time. I want it to be suggesting a stasis of some type of time that, again, may exist in the past, may exist in the future, but has hopefully a sense of timelessness, which I also felt was one of my goals in the public art, was to try to have the design feel like it related to something you were familiar with, but did it in a way, mixed it up in a way that made you possibly reevaluate what you thought you were familiar with. And that's kind of, I'm hoping, what this recent work does also. And also what the 80s work did, yeah.
Right, and since you mentioned the public work and you're not doing that anymore, would you do public work again, or are you really done with that for now?
I think I'm done with it. I never say no if someone calls me up. I usually say yes, but I'm not excited so much about working in the public sector at this point in time. Again, because I'm interested in art about art more than I am interested in the greater interpretation of what art can be. I kind of feel I did that and have, you know, projects I'm proud about that are in cities where they've had an impact on the cities, which is very exciting to be able to do that as an artist. But I've done it. So now I kind of feel like I want the work to be a little more private and be directed at a more specialized audience. I'm not so concerned that they be necessarily appreciated, although I'd like them to be appreciated generally. I'm more concerned with making art about art.
And where will these current works go? Are you preparing for a show somewhere, or is that to be determined?
Well, I actually have had a lot of activity last season. I had a one-person show in Miami. I had a one-person show in London with all this work. And I've been shown by the London Gallery, Southern Reed Gallery, in various fairs, Basel in Switzerland, Basel in Miami. So the work has gotten out. I mean, this new work has gotten out into the world. So that feels good that has happened. So I'm looking forward to future opportunities where I'm hoping this exposure gets some kind of traction and that there's an interest in this new work. There has been, but, it takes a while. And also, you may know that the way the art world is structured right now, it's very challenging as a mature, quote-unquote, artist, to get back into the game, so to speak, if you haven't sort of been in it on a constant basis, which is my case, particularly because the public art did take its toll in terms of my energies. So it's a very exciting time for me. It's almost like a renewal. I feel almost like a kid again,
right,
seeking out the same kinds of opportunities and the same kind of attention with the same kind of vigor that I felt when I was a younger artist. And I hadn't felt that in a while. So for me, I feel very energized right now and work all the time. That's all I do is make sculpture and pleased and blessed that I can and do.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And so at the same time, are you reaching out the way you did then to other places? Going far back, you were working with commercial establishments as well as galleries.
Oh, yeah. No,
it's not today,
really.
It's a different playing field. So as you say, so how do you operate now with that same, as you say, vigor? Because you're producing all this work. Is it a process of always reaching out as it was then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, very much so. It's almost like starting over in a certain way, although obviously I have some kind of track record and some people associate me with that older work, and a lot of times when they see this more recent work, they're surprised that it doesn't figure, they can't figure it out where that came from. But to me, it's a, at this point, it seems like a logical transition. But again, it feels like I'm, you know, a young artist trying to make my way in the world in a closed system. And I'm not seeking to reach out outside that system at this point. So I'm really kind of limited now, much more so maybe than I was as a younger artist in terms of my attitude. So I'm kind of putting all my apples in one basket, so to speak, at this point. Mm-hmm. And that is a challenge.
Well, an exciting one. And it seems that so far, all good signs, right? As you're saying, last year there was a lot of activity with fairs and you had reviews. And
I think had fantastic reviews that people or the critics responded to the work just the way I had hoped they would respond in terms of what they saw and what they felt from the work. So that was very exciting. So now you kind of have to let the magic happen on its own. I kind of feel like if that's the way it is, you kind of put out an energy and you hope that that energy sort of spreads and comes back. But it's not going to come back unless you put it out there. So that's the part that's keeping me sort of youthful in my attitude, I think, is that kind of challenge.
Well, I'm so glad I talked to you about this work and wish you great luck with moving forward and all of that. I want to ask you before we go what you're reading at the moment. I'm always curious what everyone's reading.
Well, a book that I would recommend anyone read, it's called, I don't know the author, it's Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. And it's actually a book that I heard many people in the art world are reading right now, but generally speaking, it's an exciting book about human development and how our belief systems developed almost in a kind of a Darwinistic fashion. How did we end up believing in like many gods, and then how did it become one god, and then had that segue economic systems, and how did believing in, say, capitalism become a generally accepted belief? All of it based on the need for humans to work together, for communities to be able to develop, and for the culture to develop. We had to figure out as a species how learn to have beliefs in common. And so that's what this book is about. And very timely, I think, also right now in terms of what's going on politically and so on and so forth and religiously and all that kind of thing. So it kind of breaks things down in a very matter-of-fact kind of fashion scientifically. And it's very fascinating. So I would recommend that book to anyone who's interested in the human species and how we came to be who we are right now.
That's great. And that was Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind by Yuval Noah Harari.
Oh, you know that, yes.
I want to thank you, RM. It's really been a pleasure talking, and thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I appreciate the opportunity.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.